It was 2011, and Danny Green was going through a very difficult time. Just a few years earlier, he had won an NCAA championship at North Carolina under Coach Roy Williams, and he was chosen in the second round of the NBA draft by the Cleveland Cavaliers. But then things took a turn. He was cut after appearing in just 20 games his rookie season. He then signed with the San Antonio Spurs to only be cut 6 days later. Then he was signed by the Spurs again, only to be cut again. The Spurs had made the decision that he was not a cultural fit for the organization. He possessed all the talent that he needed to be successful, but when it came to his attitude and his effort, it just didn't meet the standards of the Spurs. So now Danny Green is facing a future of D-League basketball or playing overseas, and it seemed for Green, his NBA dream was over. And this was a pretty low point in his career. But rather than listen to the advice of his agent and go overseas to play and make millions of dollars, he chose to fight his way back into the NBA. He only spent 2 months in the D-League before he picked up the phone and called Greg Popovich, the head coach of the Spurs, and left a voicemail that said, "I'm ready. If I can get a second chance, I'll do anything possible to get back on the team. I'll hand out towels, pass out water. This time around, I won't take it lightly. I'll do anything that I can do." Well, Greg Popovich was pretty moved by Green's phone call that he decided to give him another chance. He once again explained why he had been cut 2 times and said if he failed to meet the following standards that he laid out, that he would get cut again. Green agreed, and then Pop signed him for the rest of the season. Now, Danny Green would later go on to be a critical player in the 2014 NBA Championship Spurs, who are arguably one of the greatest NBA teams of all time. Not only that, he would assimilate to the Spurs culture. In traditional Spurs fashion, he was turning down contracts for bigger money to be at a place that he loved. The story is just a great example of how hard consequences, like being removed from a team, can actually help an individual really wake up to the fact that they need to change. Now, if you know anything about coaching, you know Danny Green's story, though, is not normal. Like, removing a player from our team often doesn't turn out that well, but it can be necessary as a coach. In today's episode, we're going to explore 3 factors that every coach should consider when making this decision, as well as how we can remove a player from our team in a way that is respectful and possibly transformational. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast.
Well, this week on the podcast, JP, we're going to continue our conversation about accountability and what do we do when players' behaviors are not meeting the standards in our program. If you're just catching up with us in episode 159, we kind of kicked off this series with JP's controversial statement that accountability is overrated. Then last week in episode 160, we talked about transformational accountability. And essentially, we're trying to challenge coaches to come up with ways other than just using consequences to discipline players, but rather to find an approach and find supports that help players to transform their character in the midst, perhaps, of some of their mistakes. And today, JP, we're going to talk about one of the questions that we get from a lot of coaches, and that is, how do you know when it's time to remove a player from your program? And I think the fear that we hear in the voice of these coaches really reflects on the concern that if a player is left unchecked, or if we offer supports and we offer progressive consequences, and the player's behavior still doesn't change, at what point do we have to let them go or encourage them to move on before that behavior or that attitude or that detrimental approach becomes contagious with the rest of their teammates. And we know in the conversations that we've had with coaches that every situation is different. Every player that we're talking about is different. Every coach, every administrator that you're working with, like everyone has a different context. And spoiler alert, we don't have a hard and fast answer to that question because we know that every player situation is different. Every coaching staff has different capacities to work with individuals. Every administration that you're working with is different. But what we want to offer you this week are some maybe key questions and perspectives to entertain, to think about when you're faced with that question, when is it time to let a player go?
Yeah, and so what we're going to jump into today is really three factors that we think all coaches should at least consider when they're faced with that decision on whether to remove a player or not. And then we're going to kind of finish up with just a little bit of discussion around the way that we can cut in a transformational way. Now, the first factor we're going to explore is the strength of our culture. And this is really important because as a transformational coach, our hope is that we can build a strong enough culture that we can introduce players into our program. And they will not negatively impact the culture. The culture will positively impact them. And that's what building a transformational culture is all about. Just think back to last week's episode in the story of Akil. And there was that moment on the beach and his effort is just really, really poor. It is not at the standard of our program. And what happened in that moment? He did not bring down the behaviors of others. He did not bring down other people's efforts. Their attitudes did not fall because of that. In fact, they picked him up and they helped him to raise his standards. And so not only that season was I really focused on how I could support Akil, how I would hold him accountable. I was spending a lot of time day in and day out to really build up our entire team culture because I knew that was a significant factor if we would be successful in helping him and a few others to have that transformational experience that we sought for every individual in our program.
So JP, when we talk about the strength of our culture, I think one of the obvious questions is, how do you know? I mean, what's the for being able to identify how strong is my culture and what behaviors can I endure as we're waiting for an individual player to raise their level or standards? Now, when we opened up episode 159, we told the story of Randy Moss being traded from the Raiders to the Patriots. And I think there's an interesting juxtaposition there because in Los Angeles, Moss was viewed as a cancer to the team. There were all these red flags that he was clearly unhappy. He was given up on routes. He was late for meetings. You know, you can go down the line of these detrimental behaviors. And yes, he was maybe the most talented wide receiver in NFL history. But the Raiders did the calculus and decided that that was more of a negative influence on their team culture than what they could sustain. So he had to go. So he gets traded to the Patriots. And for the first 3 years in New England, he's like a model citizen, the same player in a different culture. So what was different for Randy Moss in New England? Well, one, when he went to New England, Coach Belichick had instant credibility. I mean, he's wearing three Super Bowl rings. Randy Moss describes him as the best coach in NFL history. He's going to be catching passes from Tom Brady, who has three Super Bowl rings, who many describe as the greatest quarterback in NFL history. So he enters the building with this high level of respect for the culture, the organization, the coaching staff, and the teammates he's going to play with in New England. And that raises his level immediately from day one. And now fast forward to year four. Early in the season, Moss starts to complain to the media about his contract. He feels unwanted. He feels underappreciated. He's not being paid market value. And the Patriots look at that and they have to make a decision. And they start asking themselves the same question that we're talking about here, JP, is the danger is that that behavior, will it become contagious in the locker room? Or can it be contained where it's just Randy Moss's issues? That's just Randy being Randy. But the rest of the locker room understands there are certain sacrifices that we make to be part of the New England Patriots. And one of those is we often take less money than market value, and we do not complain about it in the media. And given the Patriots' history up to that point under Bill Belichick, when other players have become disgruntled with their money, they've always sided with the team first. We do not want that cancer let loose in our locker room. And so they have exhibited a pattern of we're going to cut it loose before it can become contagious.
Yeah. And so that's kind of one of the great kind of paradoxes here is that you're really working hard to build a great culture that can withstand or even support certain individuals in your program. But at the same time, that individual or those individuals can really undo a lot of your hard work to build that great culture. So we just have to be, you know, conscious of how strong is my current culture and will it be supporting or will it suffer because of certain individuals in the program? Now, the second factor I really want to explore today is this idea around our capacity as a coach. Even earlier in my coaching career, I made a really hard decision to essentially not allow our most talented athletic player on the team come back. And that was a really hard decision for me because obviously he's really, really talented. And when you remove a player from the program that you genuinely like and enjoy and appreciate, it can be pretty hard. And I made that decision because of some of the things we talked about in that first factor, which was our culture was not strong enough. I was trying to make a change, a kind of a reset on our culture. And so for that reason alone, I was tempted to remove this player from the team. But probably the real, you know, nail in the coffin was the fact that I had a level of awareness about my own capacity as a coach. I knew that the way that I was currently coaching that individual wasn't working. And all the tools that I currently knew at that time and all the skills that I had currently developed as a coach, they just weren't strong enough to help that player to make that change. And we talked about some of those things in episode 159 and 160. I did not know those things around how to support players, how to establish standards, and how to enforce those in a transformational way. Had I known some of those things, I might have been able to help that individual. But at the time, I did not know those things, and I did not know how to utilize those type of tools to be able to help players to turn it around. And so I think not only should we be focusing on the strength of our culture, but we need to also be focusing on strengthening our own coaching, you know, just becoming a better coach so that we can reach the players that other people call uncoachable.
Well, JP, if I was being honest, there's part of me that cringes a little bit when we think about the reality that could it be my fault that we don't have the capacity to keep a kid longer, to give them another chance or to try more supports. But I think the reality is that everything costs, right? If you're going to expend more energy and more time and more resources and, you know, more deliberate interactions with a player, it's got to come from somewhere. You know, where does that come from? Does that come from energy that you would have at home with your family? Does it come from your time in the classroom? Does it come from, you know, prevent you from preparing for your next opponent? Like, there's a cost to those interventions. And it doesn't mean that they're not worth it. And it doesn't mean that we don't want to, you know, be hopeful that we can make that change. But I think we also have to be realistic about, just as you said, what is our own ability or the ability of our coaching staff to be able to be malleable to this player without it having a detriment to our performance as coaches.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, Nate, because I kind of came to this realization that, yes, I have a responsibility to every individual on my team, but I have a greater responsibility to the team as a whole, as a collective. And because of our current state of our culture and because of a level of awareness and honesty about my abilities as a coach to be able to help that individual, I had to make the really hard decision to remove him from the team, you know, in that off season, and to essentially not allow him to actually come back. Now, that sure wasn't an easy decision, but at the time for me, it was the right decision.
What's difficult, JP, is that tug of war is between our responsibility to the team and our desire to be able to serve and support the individual. I think another piece of that calculus, and this is kind of the third factor that we'd encourage coaches to consider, is simply the circumstances of the individual that we're working with. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to think about that. One is, does the player demonstrate an effort or a sincerity in wanting to be brought into the fold? You know, there are times where a player may be aloof, they may be resistant to some of our supports, and you start to see that, boy, I just don't know that this is going to work out because they're not working with me. They're not working with us or their teammates as we're trying to bring them along. And to me, that would be a red flag that it just may not be worth the investment if they're not reciprocating in some way. And I think, you know, one of the things that you hear often about just sports and the power of sport is that there are times where you may have a player that needs basketball more than basketball needs them. And I think back to an experience at the first school that I coached at, where we had a player that we honestly never knew if she was going to show up for practice or even for games day in and day out. She didn't communicate with us. The parents didn't communicate. But she was somebody just because of her kind of background where having that structure and organization and relationships with her teammates was really, really important to her because she didn't have it in many other places in her life. And so as a team, coaches and players sort of came together and we came to this understanding that she was going to be held to a different standard in some ways. Like we were giving her more slack because we were willing to allow that because we saw the good that it was doing for her when she was with us. Now, again, that's not the case with every individual, but there are times when your team and your coaching staff may come together and say, no, we're willing to be patient with her because we know that she needs this.
And what's so important about that is that there is understanding and empathy towards that individual, not just by yourself, but by other people within the program. And thus, that's a testament to the strength of your culture. You know, not only do they not drop their standard, but they're probably, in many cases, joining in to support those individuals. I've had many coaches in the mentorship program who've had individuals that have endured serious traumatic events in their life. You know, everything from homelessness to, you know, domestic abuse and those type of factors that are creating really, really challenging circumstances in their life. And the team, honestly, through that experience, has actually bonded and connected probably even more in this effort to say, here is a human being, here's a person, we can help them and we can support them. And not only does it not detract from the culture, it actually becomes this thing that connects the people within that program as they're seeing a human being there, someone that needs their help, their support, their empathy, and their love. And that in itself is a powerful and transformational experience.
That reminds me of a story, JP, that Dr. Bruce Perry tells in his book, The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog. And Dr. Perry is a friend of the podcast and was interviewed with us on episode 126 and 127. But he talks about an immigrant child who had been in an abusive background in another country, was adopted into a family in the United States, and they were getting ready to introduce this child into first grade in public school. And there was a lot of concern because the child's social development was lacking incredibly linguistically, was not able to speak the English language as he was an immigrant. And so the parents obviously had a lot of concerns about bringing them into the classroom and, you know, meeting the standards of what would be expected of him there. And so Dr. Perry, who was working with the child and with the family to assimilate him into this new culture, asked the teacher if he could come and speak to the class the day before they introduced the student to school. And so he went into the classroom and he kind of explained the adventure that this child was on, that he was born in another country, that he had some difficulties in his background, and what that did to his brain and the development of his linguistic skills, his social skills, and then why they wanted to introduce him into this special class. You know, and Perry talked about how this class has the opportunity to teach him what friends are like, maybe for the first time, and how special it would be for, you know, those class members to embrace him and to welcome him and to play with him at recess, et cetera. And so he really built up the class, just like you're saying here, not only to be empathetic, but to understand the power that they could have collectively on the new student's life. And so the following day, the student's introduced to the class and everybody's so friendly and so nice. And, you know, the students are actually fighting over who gets the opportunity to sit next to him in the lunchroom. And it was incredibly powerful and therapeutic for the child because he was able to experience this safe social environment maybe for the first time, but it was made possible because Dr. Perry paved the way and sort of cast that vision about what could the culture of this classroom do for this individual who's coming in from a very difficult background.
Yeah, and so that third factor, you know, understanding the circumstances, the capacity of every individual, and being able to work together collectively to support that person is really, really important. But here at the end of the day, there is going to be moments where we do need to make that decision to remove a player from our program because our culture is not strong enough to support them. And we as a coach may lack the capacity or ability to be able to help them and to reach them. And Now, I think, honestly, one of the most ideal situations here is when you are supporting them, like we talked about episode 159, and when you're holding them accountable in a transformational way, like we talked about in episode 160, that you continuously keep drawing lines in those sand, the little progressive lines of those progressive consequences that we talked about. And eventually they just get fed up and they just walk away and they make the decision by themselves. You know, that's, I think, the ideal, you know, scenario. But there is that moment that you may have to draw that final line in the sand, like I did with Akil on that beach that day. And here's what I would remind coaches of. The way that you could communicate that is very important. And in that moment, I said, hey, you have a choice. You have a choice. You can choose to meet the standard. You can choose to work hard today, or you can choose to no longer be a part of this program. And I think so often we feel guilty as coaches. We don't want to ruin this kid's life by cutting them off the team. They need the team more than we need them. We have all these reasons why we want to keep them around and continue to give them more chances. But it's so important to remember that if we can communicate this in a way that is respectful of the person, if we can really emphasize that choice, this can be a really transformational moment for them. Whether they choose to stay or not, they have to learn to live with the consequences of their decisions. That's what life's all about, you know? They have to learn to live with the consequences of their decisions. So we need to draw a line in the sand at certain moments. But when we do that, we need to emphasize choice in that moment and do it in a respectful way.
JP, I'm reminded of something that we've been talking about on our coaching roundtables here over the last few weeks in the Thrive On Challenge community, and that is the importance of clarity in communication and consistency over time leads to credibility in your coaching. If you think about why Randy Moss went into the Patriots with such a high level of respect for the program, it's because they had demonstrated, they communicated, here are the expectations in New England. And if you don't meet them, then you don't stay in New England for decades, right? Bill Belichick has operated in that way. And when you're thinking about having to have this conversation where you may have to cut a player loose, what they've done in New England and what I would encourage coaches to do, again, is to have that clarity that it is not the player versus the coach. This is not the result of a player being the coach's least favorite or a personal vendetta or coach doesn't like me. It's a matter of we've clearly established here are the standards and here are the expectations for you. Here are the lines that we've drawn in the sand and here are the progressive consequences that you face to this point. It's not you, the player versus me. It's the player versus the standard. And if they just aren't able to meet the standard, it's no different than in the classroom. If they can't meet an academic standard, at some point, they end up failing the class, not because the teacher hates them, but because they didn't do what was required of them. And when you think about all the conflict that can arise when you are looking to cut a player, conflict with parents, the difficult position of the administration, you don't want it to be us versus them. You want it to be the player and the standard that they have failed to meet. And that's led to the decision that you ultimately had to make.
And there's just one other thing I kind of want to mention here as we kind of wrap things up, Nate. And that is that this is a really hard decision for coaches. You know, I think we hold so much responsibility for that individual. And we really believe that we can make an impact on their life. And we've been in those situations where we've worked, we've supported those individuals, and they have turned it around because of their experience for playing for us. Now, that's not always going to be the case. And sometimes just giving them the consequences of losing the privilege to be a part of your team, that is a powerful lesson in life itself. Because they're going to leave high school or going to leave college and they're going to be working in the real world. They're going to have real jobs. And people may put them on a performance improvement plan for some time, but eventually they will get fired if they fail to meet the standards of where they work. And so I think even if we can just teach them that lesson through this, and a very hard lesson, that in and of itself can be very powerful.
Well, JP, what you just said there reminds me of a story that Boomer Roberts shared with us. And Boomer was on the podcast in episodes 135 and 136. And off the air, when we recorded those interviews, he talked about a player that I actually got to see play in practice for him when I visited his program. And kid was an All-American, incredible basketball player. He transferred from a junior college and was a great contributor for them his junior year. but in the offseason got himself into some trouble. And the player ended up failing multiple drug tests and having some other issues. And so Boomer had to have the difficult conversation that we can't have you as part of the program if you're going to continue to make these decisions, and had to let him go. And so the player left and went back to out west where he was from. And, you know, Boomer didn't hear from him for a long time after that. And then a couple years later, Paul Bacardi or some other ESPN guy on Twitter makes this post of who's the best coach that nobody's ever heard of. And as you scroll down, you scroll down, you scroll down, you see a comment from this player that says, at Boomer Roberts is the best coach in America. The same guy that had to let him go and hold him accountable for the decisions that he was making. And that's, it's incredible testament to the value of the relationship, obviously, that was existed before that difficult decision had to be made. And the last thing, you know, JP, I guess I would leave coaches with is that there's so many variables to consider when you have a player that's struggling to meet your standards. You got to consider your culture. You have to consider your capacity as a coach. You got to consider their willingness to work with you. You got to consider your administration. You might even consider their parents and the influence that they may have on the program. And at the end of the day, we don't know how it's going to work out. We could tell just as many stories of players that we cut them some slack and we gave them more and more opportunities. 5 years down the road, they're still incarcerated. You know, they dropped out of college and their life has fallen apart. And we could tell other stories where, you know, we should have maybe given a player a little bit more leeway than we did. We just don't know how the future is going to play out for these kids. And I just encourage coaches, the place that you're going to find peace of mind is by making the best decision that you can for your team in a way that honors the individual based on what you know at the time. And it's going to be incomplete information, but there has to be some peace there that you've weighed all the factors. You've given it careful consideration. You care about the player. You want to protect the program, and you're doing what you think is best while accepting the fact that you may not know how this is going to play out down the road.
Thanks for listening in to the Coaching Culture Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the last three episodes where we really have unpacked how to support individuals while also holding them accountable. If you found these episodes to be beneficial, well, we hope that you just take the time to share them with other coaches, or even just take 30 seconds to leave us a review. Also, our contact information is always in the details of every episode. So shoot us an email with your thoughts and your stories. We always love hearing from our listeners.